Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, you can do so in two ways. For $5 a month, and by doing that, you're helping us to continue this mission, to grow this show. You can sign up at patreon.com/undivided, or you can become a contributor on my Locals community, brandicruz.locals.com. Coming up on the show today, there are some new proposals out to deal with the homelessness crisis, specifically in Washington State, but, you know, frankly, there's a lot of states of our political leaning that are trying to deal with homelessness issues as well. Also, some new proposals around quote-unquote gun control and dealing with quote-unquote gun violence. I have a thing or two to say about some of those proposals, so we'll dive into all of that. Also coming up, we're going to have Mary's Place join us. Mary's Place, if you're not familiar, is an organization that's been operating in the greater Seattle area for quite some time, and specifically, they help women, children, families get off the streets. It's a mission that all of us, I think, can support, but also, we're going to look at the success that Mary's Place has had in doing that with very little public funding. And I think the question is, you know, is there anything that the government can do that entities like the city of Seattle, like King County, like Washington State, or frankly, California and Oregon can do to look to an organization like Mary's Place that's had so much success with, again, so little taxpayer funds? Is there anything that the government can kind of replicate or try to learn from that to assist in our efforts and the government's efforts to reduce the number of people who are living on our streets and sleeping outside?
I think it's always about increased collaboration, right? Bringing the community together to solve the crisis. You know, what's worked for us, you know, may not be the answer, but public-private partnerships, we had so much to learn from our private partners, from corporate partners about best practices, about being data informed. We learned so much about that and really took that to heart and went to work to make sure that we could pilot programs to show progress, to show best practices, to establish best practices that are now utilized across the nation.
Also, Elon Musk again. Elon Musk took to Twitter, put a poll out there asking the Twitterverse if he should step down as the head of Twitter, and he said that he would abide by the results of that poll. Well, the results of that poll are clear, so we'll talk about what's next for Elon Musk and for the platform. The following segment is brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. If you've lived here for long enough, you know that the homelessness crisis is worse today than it was 10 years ago. If you've lived here long enough, you know that the crime crisis is worse today than it was 10 years ago. And I'll never understand people who continue to want to put faith in the same politicians to fix problems that they haven't been able to fix for years and years and years. And Governor Jay Inslee of Washington is a prime example of that. He's been the governor for 10 years. He'll be the governor for 12 years unless he decides to run again, which I really don't think is going to happen. Fingers crossed. And here you've got Governor Jay Inslee. There's a new legislative session coming up in January. And here you've got him putting out to, you know, very hoping for fanfare, these ideas to combat homelessness. And I got to think to myself, when I saw that, I didn't want to read it, to be honest. Why would I put any energy into wondering whether ideas of a man who's been in charge for 10 years while the homeless crisis has gotten worse are going to help fix things? If this man had ideas to fix the homelessness crisis, I don't think that we would have a homelessness crisis because he's been in charge for 10 years. And I also talked about the fact that when you're looking to someone to solve a problem, if they're not even willing to articulate honestly what the problem is, then that should be it. Then you should say, okay, I don't trust you to fix the problem. If you're not going to identify the problem, then you're not going to be able to fix the problem. And that's the issue here with Governor Inslee. Not only has he not prioritized and not solved homelessness in 10 years, and now it's worse than it was when he took office, much worse, but he also wants to pretend that it is a housing issue, that this is really just a matter of income inequality, that we just, if we put up some more homes, if we put up some more affordable housing, then voila, the problem will be solved. And anyone with a brain knows that's not true. You know, I was looking at the proposal that Governor Inslee put out. And look, I get it. At least he needs to propose something, right? I don't want him to just ignore the problem, but I don't have any faith in him to fix it. I mean, that is just, that is the height, that would be the height of insanity is believing that a man who hasn't fixed it in 10 years is all of a sudden going to fix it in his last couple of years in office. That's ridiculous. But I was looking at, you know, the proposals that he was putting out, and some of them, if proposed by anyone else in good faith, I might actually give some attention to emergency supportive housing for people experiencing homelessness, housing for people with special needs like developmental disabilities. Let's see, affordable housing units for lower and middle income workers, down payments and closing cost assistance for low income first time home buyers. Like, I understand why some of these, and I think that housing is part of the problem, right? I do think we have a housing crisis in our state, particularly for the middle class. It is hard for any Washington family in the middle class, even if you have a two income household, to afford a house. And that's just not right. But when you look at the issues related to homelessness, the governor always puts housing above what the true crisis is, which is drugs and mental health. We have a drug crisis and we have a mental health crisis. And those things contribute to a rapid rise in homelessness. And until the governor is willing to admit that, I just don't even want to listen to anything he has to say on the issue. Because he put out this slide, you know, the governor's office, saying, what's driving homelessness? And it says the price of housing is up, the availability of housing is down. And he gets into rents have increased. The percentage of income that people are spending on their rent is way too much. He's talking about the rise in the median home price, et cetera. And so again, when he's got this slide saying what's driving homelessness, it all has to do with housing availability and affordability. And I just think that's nonsense. You don't one day, if you're a fully functioning member of society, you know, you're all here mentally, you're not addicted to drugs, you have a job, etc. You don't just one day, if you can't afford your rent, start hawking stolen goods on Third Avenue. You don't one day, if you can't afford your rent, move into a derelict RV and park it on Elkhai Beach. That's just, there's a lot of room between those two stations in life. And I'm sorry, but for a lot of the people who are deep in the throes of homelessness, living in tents outside in the cold weather, or living under bridges, living in RVs that are bound to catch fire, selling stolen goods in the heart of downtown Seattle, there are other issues at play. And unless you deal with those other issues, you can throw them in a $24 million mansion and it's not going to make a lick of difference in their lives. And so it's just so painfully dishonest when I see this continuing focus on homelessness being a result of a lack of affordable housing. I believe we need more affordable housing, but I don't think that's going to fix homelessness. Now, the governor is talking a little bit about behavioral health, saying we need to build up community capacity for behavioral health, including a new diversion and recovery center for people with behavioral health needs and criminal justice involvement. And great, I'm glad the governor is mentioning behavioral health. But this is the governor who presided over such a rapid decline in our state's mental health system that the state's largest psychiatric hospital was defunded by the federal government because it's lost its federal certification. So again, it's just not the guy who I'm going to trust to deal with behavioral health issues. And look, I'm not saying that the governor should sit around for the last 2 years of his term and do nothing on the issue of homelessness. Fine, propose these things, do what you're going to do anyway. I just have zero faith in his ability to solve the problem. One, because he's shown us the last 10 years that he's not only not capable of solving the problem, but the only thing he's shown us is that it has in fact become worse under his leadership. And two, I do not trust anyone to solve a problem that they refuse to properly identify the cause of. The preceding segment was brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, on a similar note, today, Governor Jay Inslee and Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson came out, as we expected that they would, and announced some of their proposals to deal with quote-unquote gun violence, which we'll get to the phrase gun violence in a moment. But I want to just go through a couple of the proposals that they're very interested in, and we'll hear from them too, because like I said, they had a press conference. So of course they want to ban semi-automatic, as they call them, assault rifles. And that's something that they've been wanting to do for a long time. They want to put power back in the hands of local jurisdictions to make their own gun laws. Right now, you can't do that. You can't have a law that would supersede a law in the state, for instance. They want to require purchase permits for firearms. And they want to further address inequitable and biased policing and invest in community-based programs and education. So those are a few of the things governor, attorney general are focused on, as well as the majority party in Olympia. But let's hear what the governor and attorney general for Bob Ferguson had to say today.
I do feel now with a focus on the ban on the sale of assault weapons, I feel there's a real opportunity here for the legislature to get that law, that important law, passed. It's important for many reasons, but it is worth pointing out that assault weapons are 7 times more likely to kill law enforcement than any other firearm.
These laws work. They work because they make sure people have safety training. They make sure that we give us time to do an adequate background check. They work because there is some modest delay so that when you're in a fit of anger or you're in a desirous to commit a crime, you can't get a gun in the first 30 minutes. These are common sense measures that in some degree provide us adequate protection. And that's why we will be introducing, as governor's request legislation, a law to require a permit to purchase or transfer, receive and transfer a gun in the state of Washington.
So in a nutshell, they want to create more laws to prevent a problem that is caused by people who don't follow laws. Did I get that right? People who shoot others with a gun aren't concerned about the law. The only people who are concerned with gun laws are the people who would never pick up a gun and shoot another person with it unless it was legal in self-defense. And so when I look at some of these proposals, for instance, requiring a permit to purchase a firearm, I just see your local neighborhood gang member, "Gone Dan, I'm gonna go get my gun. Got to purchase a gun, but I need a permit first. Standing in line, signing my name, doing all the stuff I need to purchase a gun." No, it's just not gonna happen. I don't understand. The only thing that they want permits for to purchase a firearm is so when they eventually decide to take those firearms away, they know exactly where you live and who has what gun. That's just ridiculous. And as some people have pointed out, and I don't understand the quick desire to dismiss this as a non-issue, what other constitutional right do you need a permit to exercise? I don't need a permit to go to church. I don't need a permit to work as a journalist. I don't need a permit to protest the government. What other constitutional right do you need the government to give you a permit to exercise? That makes no sense. Even if you don't like guns, that doesn't make any sense. Let's see another one. Restoring local authority to create gun laws. So then you can have the city of Seattle, you know, in all its wisdom, create gun laws that are right for the city of Seattle. Let's go back to that gang member. "I've got my gun that I purchased with a permit, and now I'm gonna go shoot a rival gang member with this gun that I legally bought. But I'm not in Seattle yet, so I'm gonna walk across the city line. Oh, wait! Let me look at the laws in the city of Seattle to make sure I'm not breaking those laws." No. No, you don't have gang members who stop at the city line and say, "Well, I need to look into what the gun laws are in this city before I go and shoot this rival gang member." That's ridiculous. And all you do is confuse legal gun owners who are going to be like, "Oh, wow, now across the entire state, we have a patchwork of gun laws that I've got to try to figure out." Criminals don't care what the patchwork of gun laws is. Let's see here. Yeah, banning semi-automatic assault rifles. Look, I could either take them or leave them with assault rifles. It's just like, I'm not a gun person. You know, I get it. But in 2020, during the Occupy protest in Seattle, up on CHOP, you will remember that the self-proclaimed warlord of CHOP, Raz Simone, pulled in his car, opened the trunk of his car, and handed out AR-15 rifles to their little private security in CHOP. Did the mayor of Seattle say anything? No. Did city council members say anything? No. These are people who are die-hard gun control. But when Raz Simone and the protesters in 2020 handed out AR-15 rifles from the trunk of a car, silence. Do you think if it had been right-wing protesters who were out there, Christian nationalists, handing out AR-15s out of the trunk of a car, that they would have been silent? Of course not. This is the kind of shit that just drives me literally bananas. And to the rest of these gun control measures, you know, where they want to require a permit to purchase a firearm, restore local authority, ban semi-automatic rifles, and you hear the governor and Bob Ferguson talk about how dangerous guns are. This is the same party in Washington State that just a year ago proposed a bill that would have provided for leniency for someone who uses a gun to commit a drive-by shooting and kills someone. Even if they killed an innocent bystander, even if that innocent bystander was a child. So on one hand, you want to scream and shout and say, guns bad, guns are so bad. And then you want to propose laws that will take it easy on people who actually use guns to commit a crime. That makes no sense. If you had a criminal justice system where they were throwing the freaking book at anyone who used the gun in a crime, and then you wanted to go back on the back end and talk gun control, I would be much more open to the conversation. But to me, it's disingenuous. Tighter gun restrictions, but yeah, that gang member who used that Mac 90 rifle to kill an innocent college kid, let's try to get him out of prison early. Give me a break. It is total backwards. And then here's the other thing, and I said this on Twitter over the weekend too. You've got Democrats in Washington State. And let's be clear, you cannot blame the issues here on anyone else. There aren't Republicans in charge here. They haven't been in charge for a long time. So Democrats have to own the state of things, including the issue with crime. And if there is quote unquote gun violence, that's your problem too, right? Because you're in charge. So they want to bemoan gun violence like it's some Republican problem. We're in Washington State. If we got gun violence here, it ain't a Republican problem. So you've got these Democrats in charge. They let our mental health system absolutely deteriorate. They let the drug crisis explode by not caring about the situation on the southern border, letting deadly drugs like fentanyl enter our communities, giving people slaps on the wrist for dealing drugs, and not having a law on the books that criminalizes possession of narcotics, basically making it legal. So they want to, again, mental health system deteriorates. Drug crisis, drug dealing, out of control. They spend 2 years completely vilifying the police. So now we have the lowest number of police officers per capita in the entire nation. You have officers fleeing the state to go elsewhere. So now you don't have as many officers to investigate, to prevent violent crimes. So while that's happening, they push bills to ease the punishments for violent criminals. So again, let's recap. Mental health system in shambles, drug crisis, drugs proliferating on our streets, violent crime on the rise, including gang violence, pushing bills to take it easy on people who commit acts of violence, vilifying the police. And then when there is a rise in shootings, you want to come out and say guns are the problem. Restrict guns, that'll fix this. Without an ounce of self-awareness about the tornado of bad policies and practices that put us in this position. You want to come to us and say, oh, guns are the issue. No, the deterioration of our mental health system is the issue. The drug crisis you've allowed to grow is the issue. Lax punishments for criminals is the issue. The vilification of law enforcement is the issue. I go back to what I said in the last segment. I don't trust anyone who won't be honest about the problem to fix the problem. And they want to come out here and say, oh, gun control, let's pass these laws, this will help. That's not going to help anything. Because like I said, do we have to go back to our friendly neighborhood gang member? He's not gonna follow any of these new laws that you're going to put into place. The only thing that I've even heard whispered of from Democrats that could make a bit of a difference are community-based programs to ensure that young kids aren't getting into gangs, that young kids are getting jobs, have prospects in life, can build wealth, can get a quality education. That's the only whisper of anything I've heard from Democrats that can actually help solve the issue of the rise in shootings that we've seen. That, and getting people in charge who are brave enough to talk about the real problem. On the homelessness front, there's an organization in Washington State that I think over the years has actually been pretty effective in helping what I would characterize as truly vulnerable people who are experiencing homelessness. And, you know, as much as I say, you know, homelessness is a drug crisis, is a mental health crisis, I do believe that there are simply some people who fall through the cracks, who have no safety net, you know, women who are fleeing a domestic violence situation and they've got kids with them. And those are people who we should be able to help in an instant, because these are people who actually are seeking help, who actually want help. And we need to make sure that help is available for them. So I spoke with Mary's Place about their No Child Sleeps Outside campaign, which is running through the end of the month, and also about some of the work that they've done as an organization. Marty, thanks for being here. Introduce yourself and introduce folks to Mary's Place who aren't familiar with the organization.
Thank you for having me on, Brandy. Yeah, my name is Marty Hartman. I'm the director of Mary's Place. Mary's Place is standing in the gap from a moment a family is notified that they need to leave their housing or have left their housing and are living unsheltered in our community.
Now, you guys have been doing this kind of work since 1999. And despite the fact that, and we'll get to this later, you know, Seattle government and all this has this really terrible reputation when it comes to dealing with homelessness, you guys have been doing this work and have managed to maintain a really good reputation about how money is spent, outcomes, et cetera. How have you managed to do that?
I think it's truly because it's our neighbors, right? Right here in our hometown that are loving their neighbors, making this possible, making this work possible in our community. We've had to reach out. We exist with very little public funding. It's mostly private funding at Mary's Place, 90% private funding. And it's really the gift of our neighbors that help elevate our needs and come to our aid to make sure that we have buildings to live in, to make sure that we can open shelters in different communities. As we close one in one community, we're opening doors in another. And it's coming to our aid to provide those services, right, and support. It's a total collaboration of a community coming together to love their neighbors more.
Marty, tell me about the need out there, particularly when it comes to families.
I think what we're seeing now is a crisis, something we've never seen this many calls. Mary's Place operates the King County Family Shelter intake line for the other six providers in the county. And we work together to fill every bed every night. But now we're taking 25 to 30 calls a day. One or two families will find a place to come inside. And as the extreme weather comes, those needs and those calls and the desperation just increases with families with newborns outside, families with critically ill children, families with teenagers just trying to graduate this year from high school. So we're working to meet that need, to scale up, to make sure no child sleeps outside.
Marty, how long have you specifically been working with Mary's Place?
I've been blessed to be there for the past 23 years.
So in general, over the past 23 years, can you characterize how you've seen the need change or grow in the greater Seattle area?
I can tell you definitely that first decade at Mary's Place, I worked predominantly with single women, but children were always welcome and invited in. And it was very rare, Brandy, to see a child. Every once in a while, somebody would bring in a newborn baby and we would find that help and assistance right away. We'd make those connections to family shelters. But it was really in 2009 when 2008, 2009, when moms started bringing their children at a rapid rate to our day center in Belltown. And they would come in and the numbers just increased rapidly, where there'd be, you know, 50 moms with all of these children and all of them calling every shelter across the state and helping and supporting each other by passing a phone around. And that was really when Mary's Place knew that we could not be bystanders in this, that we had to reach out, that we had to ask our community for support. And that's when we started sheltering families in with our faith community in temples and synagogues and all different congregations. They would take our families in for a week at a time. And then that grew to leaning into this model of taking buildings that were slated for demolition and having our community transform them to bring folks into shelter every night, to now having 720 beds spread across King County for women, children, families, moms, dads, grandmas, grandpas, your pets, multi-generational families.
Is your main building still on the Amazon campus?
We have five buildings. I wouldn't say that's our main building. You know, we've had our day center for women that we've had since we started in 99. That's at 9th and Stewart. And then we have five other shelters, right? The Amazon one is definitely one in South Lake Union, but we also have shelters as far north in King County as Kenmore. And then we also go as far south as Burien, where we're excited about a project we're working on there, which is a new shelter renovation with, and then also 94 units of family housing.
So you mentioned this rapid kind of uptick in around 2009 with moms bringing in kids. What do you attribute that to?
You know, the recession, resources limited, no more funding available, the need for shelter. We were laser focused back then on housing and not shelter resources. And so the community was. And we knew that families were falling through the cracks at a rapid rate. And we knew that we had to do something. And I will say that's why we stood in that gap. Mary's Place doesn't like to duplicate services of any kind. We want to just do what's needed in the community and work with our partners to provide those resources, but there was just not enough shelter, and it's still not enough shelter for those families that are falling through the cracks.
Yeah, and we know, you know, it's homelessness is a complex issue, and there's no one-size-fits-all solution for anyone. But I do know that drugs have been a huge issue when it comes to the number of people living on our streets. How much of a factor is that in the folks who are coming to you seeking help?
I will say what you see typically outside as you're driving around is not who's coming up to our doors, right? Yes, we have some substance abuse? Yes, right? And we're making sure we're making those connections. But what we see are those families that are working that just can't make ends meet, that need that safety net because they had unexpected medical expense, a car repair that they just didn't plan on, or maybe they entered and got into a domestic violence situation where they never anticipated that when they got into that relationship and had to flee quickly. And those are where people need a safety net. Not every family has other family members or friends they can go live with. And for our families, it's typically this one season, right, of their life. The homelessness experience, the length of stay at Mary's Place is anywhere between 90 and 100 days. And we want to be there. We want to come alongside these families because there is hope and light ahead, but families need that support and need that community surrounding them to make sure that they can get to that stable housing.
Yeah. And this show is called Undivided. We look for things that we can agree on. Hopefully everyone can agree that we don't want kids sleeping outside. We don't want families who are just down on their luck financially sleeping outside. So tell me about No Child Sleeps Outside, which is the campaign that's ongoing right now.
Yes, thank you. No Child Sleeps Outside is our year-end campaign, and it's really to raise funds to help families really keep or regain stable housing. And we are on a path to do that. Mary's Place does three things, and this campaign helps fund all three things. One is prevention. We believe that we have to lead with prevention to keep families in their homes, really to reduce the trauma and the generational impact children are facing as a result of experiencing homelessness in their youth. And then if the worst happens and they have to leave their homes, we do outreach. We're right there at those cars, tents, at the end of quiet cul-de-sacs where families are parked, across the street from their school, maybe in the grocery store where they're just trying to brush their teeth and make sure they can get their education and run across the street to the high school. You know, we are everywhere out there helping families bypass shelter, move into directly into stable housing. And then, of course, we have our 720 shelter beds every night. And our No Child Sleeps Outside campaign really funds those programs and makes it possible for us to ensure that no child has to sleep outside.
So how can folks help if they're so inclined?
Absolutely. You can go to nochildsleepsoutside.org and give of your time or give of your resources. You can start a fundraising page and share that with your contacts and your connections so others can give. You know, it's $35 a night to bring a child inside, and that's all of their meals, transportation back and forth to school, healthcare, all of the things that they need to remain stable and to try to reduce that trauma, because we know that shelter is traumatic in itself. So $35 a night, if you can do that, share that need. And I think most importantly, we know how giving of your time is so critical and important to your neighbors and how it makes such a difference. And so volunteering. Right now, we see hot cocoa stands popping up. It's children giving back to children, right? Making bracelets and selling those and donating the money to No Child Sleeps Outside. But all year long, you know, you can make snack bags so kids have something to pull out of their backpack during school time when others are eating snacks. Make sure that you can collect warm weather gear. We have lots of newborn babies. You know, we're working with pregnant moms that come in that have left their homes and a lot of times in a domestic violence situation. And you can put together a, you know, a diaper bag full of good supplies so that mom has a really good fresh start when she delivers. She may come back to shelter and then move into stable housing, but she has that support and knows that her community is there for her and cares for her. Diaper drives, you know, socks. How about underwear and bra drives? Do a lingerie party with your girlfriend. So anything is possible to make sure that our families have their needs met and can really focus on moving to housing.
Lots of different opportunities to help. I love it. Marty, let's end with this. And I don't want to make this issue too political, but this is a political show. And I think that homelessness does have political implications. You know, I look at what you guys have done at Mary's Place with such limited public funds and the success that you've been able to have in helping families over the years. And then I look at the city of Seattle and, you know, the millions and millions and millions of dollars they've spent, really to no avail. From your kind of expertise on this issue, what do you think the city of Seattle, the state of Washington could do better to make more progress?
Yeah, I think it's always about increased collaboration, right? Bringing the community together to solve the crisis. You know, what's worked for us, you know, may not be the answer, but public-private partnerships. We had so much to learn from our private partners, from corporate partners about best practices, about being data informed. We learned so much about that and really took that to heart and went to work to make sure that we could pilot programs to show progress, to show best practices, to establish best practices that are now utilized across the nation. And we are sharing that information. We're working alongside the city of Seattle, King County, to share that information, to come together to really try to design a path forward so that together it's No Child Sleeps Outside. This is not a Mary's Place initiative. This will take our entire community.
Yeah, I think it's you want to bring voices into the conversation, not turn voices away. And the private sector can be such a powerful tool in helping people who are in need if the government allows it to be. So, Marty, bless you for the work that you and your whole team are doing. And it's a good holiday message, so we'll get it out there for folks.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Brandy, for championing children, for loving our neighbors in our hometown. But it's, yeah, folks can go to nochildsleepsoutside.org and even upload a selfie about how you want to support just to advocate and share the message. We would be incredibly grateful. Thank you for loving us so well.
Okay, on the Twitter front, obviously there's a lot of activity over the weekend. I talked about it on the show on Friday and the bonus episode on Thursday. So Elon Musk, he put out a Twitter poll saying, should I step down as head of Twitter? I will abide by the results of this poll. Well, the results were 57% said yes, 42% said no. And look, you know, he said that he wanted someone else to run Twitter day to day too. So I don't think this means that he's going to sell the company. I think he was always planning to step aside as a head of Twitter, but this is an interesting way to do it. And then after that poll, he said, as the saying goes, be careful what you wish, as you might get it. So I'm not sure who Elon Musk thinks, you know, should be in charge of Twitter. I'm sure it's going to be someone who is like-minded. And so honestly, that doesn't really bother me much at the end of the day. But it really I'm kind of torn on this way he's been running Twitter with this. Let's put everything up to a poll. I mean, the man has 122 million followers. So I guess if he wants to run Twitter based on what the people want, what the masses want, then this is kind of an interesting way of doing it. You know, for so long, a lot of us had been complaining about how old Twitter was run and how things were dictated to us, etc. I mean, maybe this is a better, and I mean, we'll say 17.5 million people voted in that poll. So it's not as if it's a small sample set. It's a pretty big sample set. And so I guess I'm just really torn as to how I feel about using polls to dictate, using polls to dictate all these big decisions, like should I step down as Twitter CEO? But so when it says who's going to be, he said, the question is not finding a CEO. The question is finding a CEO who can keep Twitter alive. I don't know if that's anybody at this point. No, Twitter's probably fine. So we'll see what Elon Musk does, but it's just been fascinating over the last few days to watch how he's made these decisions and kind of going to the people, and then the controversy around them and just how much attention and focus there is on Elon Musk. So we'll continue to track it. But like I said, I keep promising you guys a day off the Twitter feud, the Twitter controversy debacle. And so at some point, maybe, you know, it's a holiday. So maybe on Wednesday or Friday, I'll give you a little respite. All right, we'll end the show with some of your comments on the whole gun control proposals, homelessness issue that I've been talking about, that I talked about obviously earlier on in the show, but also on the subscriber newsletter on Sunday. Will says, thanks for understanding the gun issue for what it is. Until we stop the criminals, no gun restriction will help the problem and probably make it worse. Mark says, Inslee and Ferguson both have me just shaking my head. Stacy says, I just want to know the reasoning behind it all. How will these policies work? What does Inslee think the outcomes will be? That is a good question. Let's see. H says, thanks for your common sense with these issues. Snohomish County has had at least 8 separate gang shootings in the last 2 weeks, all within a few miles of my home. These gang bangers are teenagers 12 to 18 years old. It's horrifying. And I agree. You know, and my heart does go out to a 12, 13, 14, 15 year old who gets caught up in the gang life because that's the only option that they thought they had. Maybe they have a bad home life, whatever it is that has pushed them in that direction. That's where we need to focus our energy. And I know that, you know, I think Republicans could do more to work with Democrats on that issue, frankly, and really come up with ways, okay, how do we, you know, the path out of crime in general, I think, is having prospects for your life, being able to build wealth. And I think that there are investments that we can make that are worth it for society. You know, I'm not for just out there straight up spending taxpayer money on all sorts of programs that don't work. But when you look at the net gain, if it's a reduction in gun violence, gang violence, rather, sorry, if it's a reduction in gang violence in general, in drug deaths, in crime in our communities, then yeah, some investment to be able to give these young kids a prospect in life, a hope in life, education, etc. I think that's worth it for society. Let's see. Andy says Bob would confiscate every single firearm if he could. Well, that might be your next governor, so don't give him any ideas, Andy. Inslee talking about funding mental health is cute, and the media is here letting him get away with it. And that's another great point. Like, the media just eats this stuff up. Oh, they want to do this. They want to come in here and help the mental health system. It's like, who do you think made it so bad? There's no one. And this is one of the problems with when you get, you know, brand new journalists and young journalists just cycling in and out of some of the local TV stations. They don't know that Inslee's the one who created all these problems. You know, they don't know what happened with Western State Hospital. They just don't have that institutional knowledge. And so he proposes ideas for helping behavioral health. And everybody's like, oh, good for Inslee. It's like, no, he doesn't deserve any congratulations on this issue. There's just this... the media just blindly being willing or not qualified to do their jobs and so incapable of holding politicians accountable for the place that we found ourselves is stunning and staggering to me, truly. So those are some of your comments on what's going on. You know, the Democrats they'll get their way on some of these things that they want because they are in control in the House and the Senate and the governor's office. And I just don't see that changing anytime soon. But that doesn't mean that we can't speak out forcefully about how absolutely dumb some of these ideas are, and how their continued focus on really laws that are only going to impact the law abiding, it makes no sense. And two, it really reflects their mistaken priorities and who they truly care the most about. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense. Come back. As I said, if you want to become an Undivided subscriber and help support the show, I would love that. I would love to have you as a subscriber to the show. You can do that in two ways, patreon.com/undivided, or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com.